Asked, please turn off cell phones as they cause significant interference with microphones. We will begin in a moment. Thank you. Hola, muy buenas tardes. Bienvenido al foro de hoy. Today's Hinckley Forum is going to be recorded for radio broadcast. Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Montana Martinez, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 55 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over 70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to our website for more information. The Hinckley Institute of Politics proudly presents the 17th annual Rocco C. and Marion S. Siciliano Forum. This year's theme is the future of U.S.-Latin American relations. This is the fourth of 13 forums that will extend throughout next Monday. For a listing of all events, you can pick up a brochure in the back of the room. The title of this afternoon's forum is Challenges and Opportunities in the Mexican Energy Market. Our guest is El Licenciado Gustavo Almaraz Montaño, who is the managing partner at Grupo Estrategia Política, which is the first lobbying firm in Mexico City, as well as the most prominent and largest in the country. He is a lawyer with 40 years of political and academic experience, currently the Vice President of Government and Law Affairs at AMSPAC, the Asociación Mexicana de Empresas y Servicios Petróleos, the legal president of the National Confederation of Industrial Chambers, member of the International Association of Gaming Attorneys, the former president of the National Lobbying Association, and member of the Mexican Academy of International Law. He is the former senator for the state representing Baja California, secretary of Public Education of Baja California, the founding dean of the Humanities School at the Baja California State University, and director of the Mexican Association of Industrial Parks. Please join me in welcoming our guest, Gustavo Almaraz.
Well, thank you very much to the Hinckley Institute for Politics. It's a pleasure to be here. It's my first time here, even though we've been working with the Hinckley Institute for the last 7 years, I think, taking in interns from the Institute to our office that have been a very enhancing experience for our office and for the people that works in our office. The people that works in our office is mostly younger people, which is what you need to be a lobbyist. When I started trying to lobby 20 years ago, an old lobbyist in Washington told me, Gustavo, lobbying is for young people, and that it is. So the presence of the Hinckley Institute students in our firm has been a total success. Now the Hinckley Institute, through Kirk and Kearney, has asked me to talk to you about the energy reform in Mexico. The energy reform in Mexico, it's a very historical piece of legislation or pieces of legislation, because there are reforms of the Constitution, which was the lock that we had in Mexico for oil, principally, and energy. Also telecommunications, and also a bunch of industries that are worldwide global side, and we were stuck in our own walls. Finally, President Peña had the political will, plus the pressure from the Mexican society and from the world all around. Oil is a commodity. Oil for the Mexicans are the Virgen de Guadalupe, and oil are sacred. And the Virgen may be sacred, but not oil. Oil is a commodity, and we had to work on our oil around the world. So we went into these reforms. This reform of energy, it's in oil mainly, but also electricity, which was nationalized in the 50s from the Mexican government, and since then has been also a monopoly. It is the same as Pemex. Finally, the world situation of energy pushed the Mexicans for the reforms of the Constitution, and with the, as I said, with the political will of the president, and mainly of the political will of the Congress, which really are the ones that are moving Mexico lately, without taking any reconnaissance into the executive branch, it's in Congress where things are moving. So the Mexican energy model has been based on a state monopoly over exploration and exploitation of hydrocarbons. In 1958, the state banned risk contracts between Pemex and private companies for oil and hydrocarbon exploitation, and the state took over generation and distribution of electricity, of the electricity sector. The risk contracts is when you as a country you join a you put together a joint venture with a private company, Mexican or foreign, and you share. Both you share. If it's good, you share the wealth. If it's not good, you share the loss. But in Mexico in 58, and nobody has clear why that happens, they prohibit the risk contracts. So we were paying for service contracts. So the large companies, the large service companies, you know who they are. Well, they were happy to go there, drill. If it's good, you pay me, and if it's not good, you pay me. They didn't like it very much because they much rather have the risk contracts. But that Mexican decision, what happened is that it didn't give us the opportunity to enhance our technology and our industry, because they will not put to work their best technology, because at the end of the day, they're not going to be sharing the profits of a successful oil field like Cantarell, which was one of the most largest fields in the world, and they were not able to share with it. So it wasn't a win-win situation for anybody. However, different studies that situation for the last 40 years, that discussion for the last 40 years, took us to 2008. So in 2008, we started really discussing in Congress the energy reform. At the end of the day, with the pressures from the left parties and the unwillingness of the government of taking risk, we end up in 2008 reforming Pemex, maybe making it more modern with more elasticity, more flexibility, I might rather say, about their business, but not a reform, an energy reform, because the energy reform needed it, the constitutional reform. And that wasn't happening in 2008. So we spent another, 7 years or 8 years, you know, wasting the timing when the oil prices were very high. Definitely, we went into the reforms in the last year, and then we successfully get the reforms, and the oil prices went down. We're just in time, usually, in Mexico. We argue so much. We're always late at the party. Mexico designed and adopted a new legal framework for the energy sector in 2013 and 2014, as I already said, because also about the whatever I was saying is the oil production in Mexico has fallen despite increasing investment in exploitation and production, with an investment of $273 billion in to get 2.5 million barrels a day. And now we're even decreasing that 2.5. We are like 2.3. We used to, about 7 years ago, 6 to 7 years, we were producing over 3 million barrels of oil a day. Now we're lowering and lowering and lowering. And the prices going down, well, the excitement to invest in Mexico is decreasing for normal purposes. Cantarell production, which represented 63% of those 3.2 billion a day, represented the 63%. Now it's only 18% of 2.2, something like that. The demand for gas has grown while the production has dropped, which has caused imports to increase 30% of a total domestic consumption in 2013. The country's limited refining capacity has increased the demand for gasoline imports to the extent of Mexico now imports 49% of gasoline consumed. Those two issues that I mentioned, yes, they're true, but right now it's better to import because they're cheaper. They're gas, the U.S. gas or from some other parts of the world that if we produce it, because we don't have the technology, we don't have the equipment to produce cheaper gas, so it's easier. It's better, it's cheaper to buy it foreign. It's same as the gasolines. It's not profitable to put together a refinery. We have a refinery in Deer Park in Texas, and so much of those 49% comes from the Mexican oil coming back as gasoline from Deer Park, which is solely owned by Pemex. So it is important to put it together because. To explain it, because it sounds very dramatic, and it is dramatic, but at the end of the day, where it making sense that the gasoline in the States is cheaper to produce in the States than in Mexico, but in Mexico has an enormous tag of tax. So the government is making a lot of money on that. We, the Mexicans, are not doing very well. 60% of all the petrochemical products consumed in Mexico come from abroad. We basically dismantled our petrochemical plant about 20 years ago. Don't ask me why, because I could never understood it. But maybe because it was cheaper to import, I'm not sure. But it was dismantled to a 40% dismantle. Consequently, predictions based on the trend that our Mexico would be a oil and hydrocarbons importer, being a very important exporter. We're not sure. Should I be punching here?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, well, tell me where.
If you give me the sign, I can.
No, I can do it. Just what is the right one?
This one right here will advance you.
Okay. Along. Oh, here we are. So the blue line is the drop of the oil production, and the red line is the exploration and production investment. So we keep investing more and producing less. It's not the best of the worlds. This is how we look between the Brazilians and the Colombians. So we. Even though with all of our problems, we're not doing that bad. Yet we can do a lot better. And this is the production. I understand this is the production just from Pemex, okay? With joint ventures with other companies, plus the production that will come from private investment. Outline of a new model underpinned by. Four guiding principles. One, hydrocarbons are exclusively property of the nation. That is still the same. Second, opening of the participation of national and international private investors through new legal figures like allocations, service contracts, for profit or share production permits, is exploration of hydrocarbons, oil treatment or refining, natural gas processing, transportation, storage, distribution, and gasoline, diesel, LPG, and natural gas retail outlets, petrochemical products transmission through pipelines and storage. Three, Pemex and CFE. CFE is the electrical company, CFE, will become productive state-owned enterprises with independent to set their own budget, contract debt, and determine the compensation. Before that, there were still are going to be wholly owned by the Mexican government, but they were governed internally by a monopoly system. Controlled basically not by the energy department, but by the treasury department, because it's a money maker. So they take the money from Pemex, but they don't invest as much. So this is changing, because now they are like, it's not a private company, it's a new fear that they design that are going to be productive in their own basis without the pressure from the Treasury Department or the Hacienda. Okay. Allocations. This will be awarded to Pemex in round zero and as an exception to productive state-owned enterprises to ensure the state present in strategic projects. In order to reinforce Pemex, because the minute that you take away basically all of the subsidies from the government, you need to reinforce it if you're going to send it to compete with Exxon, Petrobras, Statoil, BP. You have to help her not to sink, because in Mexico we're not interested in disappearing Pemex. In all of the countries where oil is very important, the market is free. Brazil, Noruega, except even England, they have a state-owned company, so that it regulates the market in a sense. So we have to have a very strong Pemex so that it can compete with other big companies. So they called it the round zero, and they allocate to Pemex everything that they were doing already, and so that they can compete with the new in enterprises that are coming in. Exploration and extraction contracts. These can be signed by Pemex, associated with private enterprises and private business. All awards shall be based on bidding prices to the party offering the best conditions for the state. The state shall be able to directly hold a maximum of 30% stake. Elements for administrative termination based on serious causes, arbitration under Mexican law. Concessionaires may obtain a contract without the need to participate in bidding process to extract coal-bedded gas for coal mines in production. This is for the concessionaires of the mines, and they don't have to ask for permission to market the methane gas, which is the recorded aspects economic earning for financial and accounting purposes. Transborder reservoirs, the contract shall include no less than 20% share held by Pemex in blocks on transborder reservoirs. Transborder reservoirs are where we are bordering with the United States, like in the Gulf of Mexico. We have a bunch of fields there that are transborders. So we're very, or either the majority of the field is in the state, in the Gulf of the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, or the Mexican. So we have rules, and those are basically deep waters. Types of exploration and extraction contracts, licenses, production share are paid in kind. So this is a big discussion about, because this is disappearing the prohibition of the risk contracts. Now we're risking product with the license. License are for deep water fields in the ocean or that need a lot of investment and that need a lot of time so that the revenue can come back. Or production share. This is production share is a model that comes from Eastern Europe, and they share the production, and it's very difficult to define which one. The easiest is to share profits, and that's about it. That's how it does in another world. But this is a kind of leftish, the production share, so that the leftish party will say that they are participating in such a economic way. Okay? This is paid in cash. Okay? We sell 10 barrels you, 10 barrels myself, how much it's worth, and we split them in. Round one will be, we'll include them. The round zero already happened. Now we open to the round one, and it's going to be a bunch of other rounds. But the first one started in this year, and it's going to end up in July, where it's going to be awarded the contracts that the international companies or the Mexican companies that are participating are going to be able to. The contract shall be signed for 25 years term, which may be extended for an additional 10 years. This situation is very modern for Mexico. This is where we're going all the way to try to insert ourselves into the globalized country. A little bit late, but still, we have to do it at the end of the day. Contractors shall be solely responsible for covering all costs and providing all staffing and personnel, technology, materials, and funding for all activities. 25% national content must be guaranteed by 2015, an increase of 35% by 2025. This is another discussion with the leftish people, the leftish parties, and the Mexican industry. This is very difficult to accomplish. How you are going to measure the national content of a oil well is going to be very difficult. But it was a negotiation that had to be done. What is going to happen if we don't accomplish the 25%? There's no sanction at the end of the day. So let's put it there. And if it does, nobody is against that idea, because if you want to enhance the Mexican industry, nobody's against it. It's the part that still comes from the last century, where the Mexican government were extremely protective of our industry, that they didn't let it grow. So those are parts of the last century ideas. Domestic companies will be offering comparable prices, quality, and timely delivery conditions. The round zero process that began in March 2014 determined the hydrocarbon exploration and exploitation project to keep exclusively by Pemex. I already explained what is the idea of giving the round zero to Pemex. Okay, these are what are they having. It's kind of a technical, and I'm going to skip it if you don't mind, because otherwise we're going to fall asleep here hearing so many numbers. Round one process involves establishing the regions where private enterprise will participate in hydrocarbons exploration and exploration by means of an alliance with Pemex, through profit sharing and production contracts, licenses that will allow private enterprise. Tenders will be in deep waters, unconventional resources, shallow waters, and offshore and onshore fields of exploration and production of hydrocarbons. These are the round one already started the 15th of December, 15th of December, and it will end in July 15. July 15, in 2015. This is how it's moving right now, and this is where the foreign companies and Mexican companies are participating. This is also very new in Mexico. This is it, and this is really disrupting Pemex. Pemex is not used to the people that work at Pemex have been working there for 20 years. So this situation is totally out of their minds. So it's been very difficult to move them to go to this. I have to establish that they don't have to do it by themselves. Before, they used to do everything because they were the owners. Now they are just another company. A national company, but just another company. This is doing it by the Energy Department and by a couple of commissions that have to do with hydrocarbons and permits and everything. And they are the ones that are pushing. But once you get to Pemex, which are they used to be their owners, they don't let go. So we're really struggling with this round one. These are the companies that are already involved in the round one. The map shows the areas that would be part of the round one. It's 38 foreign companies, 50 billion between 2015 and 2018. The gasolines, we Pemex used to own, well, Pemex still own the franchise for the gasoline stations. The gasoline stations, the business is franchise, and they have to buy the gasoline from Pemex and sell it at the same price. Their competitive basis is non-existent. They make money by a small margin that Hacienda or Treasury Department gives them. And there are about 7,000 gas stations in Mexico, all used to just have one provider. Now, in 15, the gasoline prices are started to work with the market a little bit, but it's open now. They can be more competitive one to another. That is going to happen between 15 and 17. And in 18, free price reflecting market conditions. By that time, retail sales outlets, other than Pemex brands, in 2016, like Exxon and Chevron, or the Venezuelans, or the whoever sells has the gas stations. This is another enormous discussion that has been in Mexico for many years, because the gasoline retailers, they don't want to compete because it's easier just to buy from the same provider and sell everybody at the same price. They compete with maybe a little bit of service, and they have a restaurant, and they have there are like the small shopping centers, so small. But, well, they agree to this. In electricity, which is the other big reform, also the market and the situation in the world pushes over, and because CFE would have the monopoly of everything, we were losing an average electricity rate. We were losing, we have enormous distribution losses. But in that sense, we had an average electricity rate in Mexico are 25% higher than in the United States. But if you take away the subsidies, we're 73% higher than the United States. It's very difficult to compete in the world if you have these utility expenses so high. Mexico is also lagging behind the use of renewable sources for electricity generation. We have very small fields, one in Baja California. This is just growing. It's U.S.-owned in Oaxaca, and we have a lot of problems. It's still very, very, very new. The energy reform established the following for the electricity sector. The Federal Electricity Commission, CFE, will manage, operate, and maintain its transmission and distribution network. The CFE may hire third parties to expand, modernize, finance, and operate transmission projects, modernize the distribution areas, and reduce losses. The private sector may participate in power generation and marketing projects in the transmission and distribution activities and to limit the extent. The CFE and private companies can generate electricity without mutual commitment of the for sales amount. The use of this before, if you would have a cogeneration plant, you could only sell that electricity to the CFE, and Hacienda or Treasury Department will determine the price that your company is going to get for that production of electricity. And that will always has been a major discussion, because they really put them to the wall so that they accept really low prices. That is finished. Okay? It's going to go to the market. The use of natural gas in power generation will be driven by expanding the extracting pipeline networks, which is characterized by being close to the consumption points without the need for transmission networks. The idea is to ensure the micro renewable energy generators are able to sell the energy more easily than expeditionally. The most contaminating power plants will be replaced clean technology to meet the goals. Those are CFE plants. Now, energy, the generators. Power plants with capacity higher than 0.5 megawatts shall require generations.
Sorry.
I have to take my vitamins, otherwise. Otherwise, I forget. Well, this guy, when you're getting old, you have to take vitamins every all day, like a baby. You start drinking milk, and now you drink vitamins every 2 hours. So remember. They may engage in marketing activities before you put your plant, and you have to sell it to CFE. Now you can sell your electricity everywhere you find a market. They may sell. I thought I was in Polanco because Polanco is like that all day. Polanco is where I live in Mexico City. Doesn't bother me. I'm used to it. And they may sell their electricity directly on the wholesale electricity market or through the electrical supplier cover agreement. Now, we have exempt generators which are for self-consume. And those, they cannot go into the free market. They have to keep consuming their own energy. If they produce an excess of energy, they have to sell it to CFE or to a supplier, a company that's already in the market. These are, a lot of them are like that, like industrial parks and cement plants, like the CEMEX plants. Opportunities in the electricity market. CFE currently serves more than 37.4 million users, and the segment continues to grow 4.4 annually. The CFE obtains 70% of its revenues from the industrial and commercial sectors. Demand for natural gas for power generation in Mexico is expected to reach 7.7 billion cubic feet by 2028. So it's a big market, still open, growing. And in the council, the Mexican council today said something very interesting. We are a market of 35 million persons that can buy or sell goods, let's say, not expensive, but out of the reach of the people under the line of poverty. But this is that people under the line of poverty are growing and getting more money into their pockets. So the market, if you lower the price because of the competition, the market is going to be huge, huge market. And growing. I don't know, we've been growing with all these chains around us. Without those chains, we have to grow very much and become a very, very attractive market. Energy reforms allow for greater competition in Mexican market thanks for the following factors. Governance and financial stability. The Mexican Stock Exchange will finance energy project. National industrial forecast close to $30 billion U.S. of investing in the sector. So it's enormous. Pemex is open to partnering with international companies. In parallel, the hydrocarbon sector will look to develop energy products such as renewable wind in Oaxaca, as I was telling you, a total of 12 electricity infrastructure and natural gas products worth close to $3.3 billion will be tendered in 2015. Bidding processes are accompanied by independent transparency organizations such as Transparency International. This will be a long-term process due to the delay of drafting reforms in the sector because the reforms were done on the Constitution between 13 and 14. But the drafting of the secondary laws are becoming a drag because all the interests that are involved, government, unions, industrials, big millionaire, big investments, are not willing to just pull out of the business without a fight. So political interest, we're going into elections in June, so it's dragging. But as I tell everybody, because they get mad, this is a country. This is not a household. This is not a company. This is a country. Countries move very, very slowly. We are always trying to see a country grow as we grow as humans, and that is totally wrong. So once we make this big movement in the reforms of the Constitution, obviously the secondary laws are going to drag for the next 20 years. Let's say minimum 10 years. That's how it works in every democracy, even in the states. The difference is that we are faster in getting laws voted but not applying it. And the states are very difficult to get a law passed, but when it passes, it's applied immediately. There's a little bit of a difference. That's all. But we're on the right track. Maybe a little late, maybe very late, but we are on the right track. Mexico is not going to end up tomorrow. Okay, despite the new regulatory framework and interest shown by the different investors in Mexican energy market, there are some challenges that will impact the development. External, low demand and increased oil supply in the market. Self-sufficient of the U.S. energy sector. U.S. is our number one customer in oil-wise. So now U.S. is becoming self-sufficient. Obviously, our sales are going to decrease. Drop in international oil prices. Right now it's 52.57. Strong competition in the market. Everybody sells oil now. Everybody has that community. Internal problems in our country. Budget cuts, $62 billion in 2015. Security and rule of security, which we have a major, major problem there. I'm not trying to put it away. Obviously, something that really bothers the investors, Mexicans or foreigners, is the rule of law. We have a major problem with the rule of law. And that is going to take quite a while to fix it. It's an educational and generational situation that we have to start working, or we've been trying to work on it. Elections. We have elections this midterm this year. Is the Congress is a stake. Nine states are changing governors. Nine states are changing. About 15 states are changing local congresses. So it's a very major electoral year, important for the Peña Nieto government, and resistance from the opposition and the local governments to all of these changes. We still have states that are being ruled by the same political party like the PRI for the last 80 years. That's one of those states is Peña Nieto's states. So you can understand what's going on in the federal field. Well, with this, I thank you very much for your attention. I finish. Don't ask me too many questions because I'm not an expert on this. No, I'm open to your questions. And you can include questions about Mexican politics also. So it will be more fun.
So we'll open this next portion to question and answer. Please speak directly into the mic, state your name, and give a little information about yourself.
Hello, Colin Best, MPA program. I was just wondering if you could tell us about your time when you served in the Senate and if you worked on any of these proposals.
Well, I served between 88, 91, 92. No, not on these proposals because these are very new. This is the end of the when we started the energy reform. That wasn't an energy reform in 2008. Was the PEMEX reform? No. When I was in the Senate, my participation was in the NAFTA. We were the pioneers on the NAFTA, and we had to convince the private sector, which they were really on war painting, because they were going to lose all of the privileges that the government would had been giving them since the 50s, when we had this rule that we will have to produce our own products. I don't know how to say it in English, but we shut down the imports of goods. It's my mother telling me that, take your vitamins. Sorry. You know, and I don't forget what I was saying. So the capital goods, it was for capital. Produce you're a big market. You're going to grow enormously. We were going out. We were in the Mexican Milagro Miracle. That's what our economy was called. So you're able to produce your own machinery, your own capital goods, and produce your own goods. So don't shut the door to the rest of the imports. That happened to all of Latin America. That's why we didn't grow, because the CEPAL decided that. For the Asians, they did it the different way. They opened the market, and that's why the Japanese and Malaysians all that grow. That's basically one of the theories. So this situation was for 30 years, something like this. And when the NAFTA discussion came, well, all of this large companies, they made a lot of money because of protection. We had bad products, very expensive. So our argument was, this is not for your saving. This is for the people. We need to lower our prices, and you have very high price. And the first thing they opened was the market to consumer goods, and the inflation came down. So we spent 3 years arguing with basically the private sector and the agricultural sector because they didn't want to open. Finally, went into the NAFTA because the other argument was that how are we going to compete with the Americans? They're going to totally walk all over us. And one of the ones that were very opposed to that was, in those days, the father of the president, Don Raul Salinas, father of Carlos Salinas. And one time he told me, Gustavo, because I'm a friend of Salinas, he said, Gustavo, talk to the president. Don't let him go into the NAFTA. Because Don Raul used to be the economy secretary in the 1950s or something. So he was very much against that. So we said, Don Raul, whatever the president says in Mexico. And it was, what happened is that we are an economy, a small economy, we're very rich, 35 in those days was like 25 million, like small European country. That would be the ones that consume and produce. So that will bring the people. Now we are 35 millions of Mexicans involved in producing and consuming. So the NAFTA for us has been fantastic, really good. In 1994, when the country dropped down, if it weren't before NAFTA, which is Clinton, Clinton wouldn't be able to save us because he didn't have the economical and legal instruments to save our economy. We paid for that, but we were saved by that because of the NAFTA. When I was discussing the NAFTA as a senator, our trade was $52 billion a year. Now we trade with the U.S. almost $2 billion an hour. The trade is enormous. So somebody that thinks that we haven't been benefit from the NAFTA is wrong. And it has been a win-win situation, definitely. For the U.S. has been very good also. So that's what I was doing when I was a senator a long time ago.
Gustavo, Kirk Jowers, director of the Hinckley Institute, and when I first met you down in Mexico City, I was told by a very successful businessman there that you were the first and most powerful lobbyist in Mexico. I think the most interesting thing for us and the people listening on the radio would be the fact that you were the first lobbyist, or how someone could claim that, because of course in the United States we've had lobbyists since at least George Washington. Can you kind of walk us through that?
Sure. I would say that I was the first lobbyist in Congress. Lobbying in Mexico has been in the executive for until 97, that the PRI lost the majority in the House. That's when the lobbying in Congress started. Before that, the lobbying was made basically in the executive. The Congress didn't count very much. The Congress, the great legislator would be the executive branch, and the Congress would, you know, just say yes. And if you don't say yes, you're out of the picture. So what happens is that when the PRI lost for the first time in 97, the majority in the House, it opens a window of opportunity that I perceive. And I say, how do you perceive it? Well, hunger is very creative. And I had three children, one wife, and many expenses. So I'm not sure where did I got the idea, but hunger has to do a lot of it. Talking about poverty, you get creative. when your pocket is not working. So I perceive the window of opportunity in Congress, because in the executive, the large organizations like the Chamber of Commerce, the Chamber of Industry, the confederations, they would do a very effective and transparent lobbying with the executive branch. But they would deal with 4 or 5 members of the department, like the secretary, the undersecretary, and a couple of 2 or 3 more general directors, depending on their sector of economy. But when it opens in the Congress, you had to go and deal with 628 legislators. So you have to be selective. And to be selective, you have to be advised who to go, even if you're going to the committee that is where your problem is. But you have to know where to go, to who to knock the door. That's what I started doing. And the problem was that the other type of lobbying that was working in Mexico, it was what we call the coyotes, corrupt people that would sell meetings and blah, blah, be intermediaries and all that. So the line between corruption and the lobbying, and it happens all over the world, is very thin. You have to keep very, very straight and known and knowledgeable of where what to go and what issues to discuss. Otherwise, you lose credibility and they won't open the door. Because in Congress, things are very clear and very transparent because of the volume and of the volume of the people. And in Mexico, you cannot finance political campaigns, nor the lobbyists, nor the private sector. So that keeps a little bit of a buffer between one line and the other. So but what our firm is the first and oldest and largest, basically on the federal Congress. Now we go a lot to the executive branch because we're doing a lot of consulting for Fortune 500 companies that we have as clients, and we prepare their papers for their lobbying in the executive branch. We work for companies that have interest in the state, so we lobby with the governors or the local congresses. But we started just on the federal Congress, opening this line of lobbying just on the Congress. That's basically.
I have a question. I was working with Grupo when they were passing the energy reform, and I had the opportunity to talk to a lot of people in Mexico City, and I feel that the general public's opinion about the Mexican energy reform was negative. And from your discussion, and from what I've studied about it as well, I've seen it in a very positive light. Why do you believe that the perception of the public is negative towards it, or is it because they're not very informed, or just what is your take on that?
It's because they're not very well informed, and it's very difficult to inform a society that has grown with the idea that the oil is sacred. Is the Virgin, the Guadalupe Virgin. So when a society grows up with that perception, because of the propaganda that the government used to work on it, it's very difficult to eradicate that perception. Plus, a very effective campaign by the leftist parties, very noisy, very loud, very very strong, and people tend to think that the government is always doing the wrong thing. They're not very lost, but usually that's basically what they do. Whatever they do or you do in the government, people that are not well informed because the TV doesn't inform you very well because of the communication programs are not good. So that perception. That was the same thing that happened with the NAFTA. The perception was bad. The gringos are going to come and walk all over us. That was the perception. There was the idea from everybody, left, right, and center. Basically, that was the idea, including a lot of politicians. So that in those days, the Mexican president was extremely powerful. So no matter what the rest of the people would say, the president will point out an idea and will go for it. And it was backed by the U.S. also, because our relations with the U.S., they have to be very important. We're partners, we're second partners. We have a very integrated relationship, and basically with the NAFTA, it's just one region. A lot of Mexicans don't like to hear that, but that's the reality. We are just one region with Canada. That's why the TTP has to work, because we have to compete with Asia with more enhance of our capability to go into the world. But that's basically bad information.
If I can. Actually, I have two last questions for my last one question. First, I think an easy one. With the low oil prices, which you mentioned, The Economist and other magazines talk about the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are doing fine with the low prices because of the geopolitical advantages it gives. Russia and Venezuela, for example, are getting killed by the low prices. Where does Mexico fit in that scheme? And then two, can you just give us an update on President Peña? He was kind of seen as a bright light here in the U.S., and now with some of the events, he's come under some fire, and I'd love to know just kind of what are Mexicans thinking about their president right now.
Well, I think Mexico, and Mexico is in between the ones that are going very well and the ones that are going bad, because with the lower oil prices, we're importing cheap gasoline and started to lower the prices on the Mexicans. And that gives the government a big revenue because of the taxes and everything. So if they're buying at 1 peso and they're selling at 10 pesos. So that is working for Mexico, which is because of our enormous gasoline consumption. And it impacts the inflation and all that. Right now, it's not going to hurt us that much because we have insurance coverage for this year. Our problems are going to start next year. So if the prices, with the oil prices down, what happens is that the investors are not going to be too eager to go into the investment, like in the shale gas, which needs a lot of technology and a lot of investment. But there's no price, so it's going to be difficult. Eagle Pass is going to suffer with that. So I think we're in between. I would say that. Obviously not good, definitely not good, but definitely also not that bad right now. So we have to enhance our secondary loss and get the round one going on, because the round zero is the one that is going to establish Pemex, and they're already doing that. They're not investing because Treasury Department cut their budget to half. So we have to push the round one really fast so that private investment can come as soon as possible to balance our balance sheet. So I would stay in the middle, going to the bad part, not to the good part. But now we're not getting killed because we have an enormous exportation platform. That are not oil products. We're exporting to the U.S. and the rest of the world in enormous quantities. We have the manufacturing international companies, the maquiladoras, which we have an enormous investment in there, and our products flow all over the world through the system of the maquiladoras. I don't know if you're familiar with the I forget the name in English. And we have an enormous aerospace industry that is the second in the world, as the council said. So we are not depending only on oil, but obviously it's our main source of income. With President Peña, well, he started very good because with a very healthy economy and with a very healthy relationship with the rest of the parties, and he came the Pacto de Mexico, the Pact for Mexico, that permitted the all of the reforms. The problem has been that, corruption in Mexico still very, it has been since the Spanish came there. Not because of the Spanish, because since then, because the Indians didn't have any corruption, because It was a different system of life. So corruption is something that we have badly dealt with that for many years. But now what happens is that society has grown. They're checking on the government. Before, for many years, society wasn't very much involved in what they're doing, and they didn't have any information because the government would control the information very much. But now you have the social media very strong, the newspapers, the television is not controlled anymore. So what happening is they're putting an eye on things that are not well done. And I don't know if I can translate this, don't do good things that look bad. Basically, when you're a public official. In Mexico before that, that wasn't very much taken into account because there was no accountability. Now there is maybe not a legal accountability, but a very strong social accountability, and not only in Mexico, but in the rest of the world. So we're doing really bad with our image, not President Peña. Is that it would be good if just President Peña pays that price. We, the Mexicans, are paying that price very strongly all over the world. The council was telling me, you know, everywhere I go, everybody says, it's the Mexicans. Peña is the president, but we are paying for that. No? But eventually, and I'm an optimist, is that those things are going to correct. Maybe not these 4 more years, but they're going to teach the politicians that they are always being watched by the society. And that's good. And we're working very strong on the transparency laws and the anti-corruption laws and working very hard. And these things that are very bad right now are pushing that bill. That bill was dead a year ago. And now the bill is working like crazy. I think it's going to be voted by the end of the session, which is in April. So it's one thing leads to another. At the end of the day, we are going to pay a price for that, but it's a good thing at the end of the day.
Thank you. Please join me in thanking Gustavo for coming all the way from Mexico City to speak to us today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris, for inviting me. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks so much for coming.
See? Okay. Well, my English is not good, but it's...
No, you did. I was... Blown.